Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and WNST. We are Baltimore Positive. I'm so Baltimore Positive, I'm wearing my Keep Preakness in Baltimore pin from Damien O'Doherty.
It's been a good week.
Don Moeller is here, and you have executive produced the Baltimore Positive bonus bye week coverage, and you've invited a few folks I don't know on. This next guest is somebody I do know. I'm going to let you introduce him.
Sure. I just wanted to say we're pleased to welcome Adam Rosenberg. And Adam, what we've tried to do with these segments is to find folks and organizations in the city and in the region that are making a difference. Because I think it's so easy for folks to throw their hands up, say, what can you do about the city? And, you know, our belief is that there are thousands of people doing great things in the city every day to make a difference. And the Baltimore Child Abuse Center and the work that you and your folks are doing certainly goes to the head of that class. So welcome and thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for giving me the opportunity to be on the show. And it's good to connect with both of you again, Nestor and Don. Thanks.
You know, I was there a number of years ago. I think it was before my wife had cancer, probably about 2012-13 range. I think I toured your facility. For folks who don't know, start at the beginning with the beginning of we know there are children who have been abused. It's something we don't like talking about. It's something that is so horrific that we don't talk about it, I think, culturally. And then someone like you comes into someone like my life, and I can tell you stories about my parents taking in foster children after they lost their child, that I saw things that, you know, that they make you shudder, and you deal with this every single day, and it's such a sensitive topic.
Yeah, you know, every day kids are victims of terrible traumas, whether it's child abuse, sexual assault, human trafficking, witnessing violence, witnessing homicide, living in a violent neighborhood. And for over 30 years, our organization has been is a nationally accredited organization that works collaboratively with our partners in law enforcement and medical and mental health and social services to make sure that we can give kids and their caregivers the help that they need as quickly as possible. So we're able to find out what happened to them or what didn't happen to them and connect them with the right doctors and mental health providers and resources so we can get them back to well again. No kid wants to be a victim of a crime. No kid wants to be a witness in it. They want to be kids. And our child-focused program really makes it a point to focus on that there and let us all, you know, collaborate around, you know, what we call, you know, the collective Thanksgiving table, right? That we're, you know, no one's doing this by themselves. We're all working together for a common goal here. And that common goal is to really focus on what happened to a child aged 0 to 18 and to see the many bad things that happen. And let's do what we need to do to get them well.
Child-focused program. I guess, Adam, one of the things that would be helpful to our listeners, to the folks who are watching on Facebook, can you walk us through, certainly no names, but can you walk us through a child and how that child gets to you and then what happens once that child gets to you? So yeah. Let's say Bobby or Susie or Tawan. Give us a picture.
Over 5,000 kids come through here a year. And
give us that number again.
5,000.
That's a large number at the corner of 23rd and Charles.
Right. And some of them are coming multiple times because we're offering on-site therapy. It's a new program that we've done since you were here over the last year and a half. We have 6 therapists on site, and each one of them are full. If I had another 6, they'd be full too, Nestor. And kids come to us after they've experienced the trauma. So typically law enforcement or our partners in Baltimore Police or Child Protective Services in Baltimore City and Baltimore County have a kid, and you know, there's a variety of laws and agreements that are in place, but pretty quickly, you know, within 2 hours or 24 hours after that trauma occurs, many of those children are coming to us. So we can then sit down and ask them in a forensically sound manner using someone called a forensic interviewer to ask a kid a bunch of questions and let the child in their own words say what had happened to them. And in our building, you know, we've got a child life program like you'd see in a hospital. So we have people who are working to make that kid feel comfortable, you know, for what's about to come next. There are kids coming here from Child Protective Services who are entering foster care because they're required to get a medical examination. And so we're able to use our child abuse pediatricians to really see, you know, what trauma may have occurred there. So we're making sure kids are entering the system as healthy and as safe as possible. And once they've arrived here, you know, and we've got a warm, friendly building that's in the old Goucher College dorm. We have a facility dog named Manny who greets kids when they come in there, and a welcoming staff with butterflies hanging from the ceiling and a lot of light and colors that are just meant to really open up and inspire. Then we're, you know, dividing people up, and staff's talking to caregivers, staff's talking to kids, and, you know, we're trying to come up with answers as quickly as possible. 24 hours a day, I might add.
Yeah, well, I would say trust would be the first thing, right? I mean, that when a child comes there who has been harmed, finding someone that's bigger than them like us, that they can trust,
that's
right?
That's a big part of it, is building that trust and having a space that's focused on them. So we're not a hospital, we're not a police station. We're a child space, and really one, and we've evolved the space, you know, over the years to make sure we've got space that's appropriate for teens, and space that's appropriate for kids who've been trafficked, and space that's appropriate for kids who need therapy. So, you know, we've got a lot of different, you know, elements here that make it easier and make it really trauma informed. And trauma informed has become one of these big buzzwords that people are really starting to take action around. I give a lot of credit to Zeke Cohen. Councilman Cohen's been trying to make a trauma informed city, particularly when it comes to children who've been impacted by that, and it's work that we've been doing, you know, through a lot of trial and error over the last 10 years here, make sure we can respond to that.
Well, you say trial and error. Give me the things that you know are working. I mean, you've been there long enough, and I've known you long enough that somewhere out there was an 8-year-old little girl that came to you broken that's now a 20-year-old girl that probably would still be in your life or in the lives of the people around your facility, because it isn't transient. Your people are dedicated to this. You're keeping people around there for long term.
It's a great question to ask, and I think one of the things that we're able to do is we're able to ask the questions in the right way, and these are questions that anybody can ask, but instead of saying what's wrong with you, it's saying what happened to you, and it's recognizing that there are traumas and experiences that have gone on in someone's life that ends up impacting how they're acting today, physically, mentally, emotionally there. It's a concept called adverse childhood experiences, which recognizes the fact that there are, unfortunately, many common things that happen, many bad common things that happen to kids, and can impact how they end up as adults. And so when we start with that basis of strength-based assessment, and let's work with the trauma as opposed to saying something's wrong with this kid, then we can, again, build that trust and really begin to get the right answers and responses there, and having the right team that's available so we can meet these kids when they're ready to talk. You know, before we had blown up the program and done things differently over a decade ago, kids had to wait 3, 4, 5 days before they can get an interview. And now we've set it up so that we can have our partners bring a child in within 2 hours of an allegation, day or night, Christmas, New Year's, Thanksgiving, weekends, whatever it is, because we need to be ready to listen when that kid's ready to talk.
Adam, 5,000 kids, I want to jump back to that. Are they from all across the region or just Baltimore City?
Baltimore City and Baltimore County. I mean, most of our kids that we're seeing are Baltimore City there. And don't walk away with the impression that there's 5,000 children who've been abused every year. I think these are also kids who are coming in who've witnessed different traumas, entering foster care, coming back for repeat mental health treatment there. We probably have 1,800 unique kids we see, but, you know, we've got, you know, when a kid comes to us, we're seeing that kid multiple times now because we're helping them get on that path to well again, and we're also recognizing that, you know, quite often we have to meet that family where they are. And so the child just doesn't hop on a bus by themselves and get here or take an Uber, right? They're coming with their caregiver. And typically that caregiver is going to have 2 or 3 other kids in tow. And so, you know, we're taking care of a lot of kids when they show up there. And so even if kid A needs to get therapy, you know, we got kids B and C with us who we're trying to get the right resources there. As, you know, mom's got to figure out how to take care of all that there. If mom has to choose between getting her child therapy or finding, you know, child care and daycare and all the other things to watch the other kids who weren't impacted by the abuse, she's not going to be able to choose the therapy there because you've got to deal with the problems in front of you. And so our family advocate team really works hard to reduce those barriers. And one of those barriers is, you know what, bring all the kids. Let's make sure that everyone's safe and everyone's healthy. And, you know, let's give them the right tools to keep themselves safe going forward. But, you know, we recognize that, you know, we're dealing with families and not individual kids who are just, you know, magically showing up here. We've got to make this as easy as possible on everybody.
He is Adam Rosenberg, child abuse prevention expert, a guy I've seen around town, and the executive director of the Baltimore Child Abuse Center. You can learn more about their mission and all that they're doing at bcaci.org, and also in conjunction with our friends over at LifeBridge Health.
Hey, Nestor, I want to throw one last thing in there. You said you're wearing your Preakness Pride pin on, and one of the most exciting things that we're doing is since we joined LifeBridge Health, we're going to be relocating our operations to that new campus in the coming years. That is, LifeBridge develops the Pimlico parking lot that it's on. We've been aggressively planning our own new center to be located in Park Heights. That's, you know, easy, accessible on existing bus routes, Northern Parkway, 83. It's an easy place to get to, and you know, we're going to build a state-of-the-art program that's going to be new space that allows us to really address the trauma of many people in the city there and in the region as well.
I know you're not going to get into the political debate back and forth, but given what you just said, the recent news about the Preakness must have been music to your ears.
Well, it's great. I think it says a couple things that, you know, not only are we going to move our building there, but it'll be a community that's going to develop. And we're proud to be a part of it. We recognize that Pimlico and Park Heights has a great deal of trauma that goes on there. And if we can have our services available for a community dealing with a lot of those traumas, then we'll be doing great. And so regardless of what the politics are, you know, we've been doing this every day for 30 years, responding to those traumas. And so we'll continue to do it. And we have this great opportunity working with our partners at LifeBridge to build a brand new building that'll enable us to deliver 21st century solutions in a 21st century building.
Well, you mentioned LifeBridge, right? So, you know, you get corporate involvement, you get local corporate and local hospital and healthcare involved. Where's the government in this? And when a child is abused, what part does the government, I don't want to say own, but participate in the survivor or taking a child and taking away from their family and saying, you know, at what point when someone comes to you that the government has to get involved at that point, right?
You know, I think there's a couple different ways the government's involved with us. And certainly on a statewide level, there's funding that's made available to us through the Victims of Crime Act that the governor's office pushes out. It's federal money that gets pushed through each state, and we're lucky to be able to receive, you know, sufficient funds to be able to provide the services necessary. On a local Baltimore City level, we've got our partners in police department and social services and prosecution who work with us to be able to handle these cases there. You know, we become a one-stop shop, and so that child doesn't have to go to a district police station and a detective unit and an intake at CPS and a specialty unit at CPS and get asked over and over again, tell me what happened to you, tell me what happened.
I would think 25 years ago, you almost got treated like a criminal, right? Like, literally, you were taken to the station house.
Right, policeman with a gun and saying, hey, kid, tell me what happened. Right. And when they come here instead, you know, we're treating them like children. And that's a big part, that those partnerships have been so strong for so long, and we've been lucky that we transcend politics, I'd like to think, that, you know, administrations change, police commissioners come and go, you know, but, you know, we're still doing this work, and we're an essential partner with everybody we have, and so I like to think we have good partners in place who, when they come here and they're in those positions, we're working with them, and we're here to help them do their job better. Let's let police officers investigate, and they don't have to be social workers. That's what we can do there. You know, let's let Child Protective Services focus on, is the child safe at home, and we can deal with setting up the transportation and some of the intractable things that, you know, would keep their eye off the ball. And so it lets them maximize their efficiency so we can maximize what we do well.
What are the age group of the students that you serve, Adam?
It's pretty evenly split, about a third, third, and a third. So about a third of the kids we see are under the age of 8 years old, and about a third of the kids are over the age of 13. So, you know, pretty much every age band, and every age band has its own issues and complexities there. You know, we've got a lot of little kids coming in who are going into foster care, so we're doing a lot of medical exams there. And we've got a lot of older kids coming in who are, you know, 16, 17, who, you know, are at risk of being victims of trafficking, who they're runaways, and they quite often are, you know, they're on the bubble. And so, you know, they make one wrong decision and they could find themselves, unfortunately, being a victim of trafficking. And we can redirect them, hopefully, and, you know, keep them, you know, going in a better pattern there. And so we've got kids all over the place that we're working with and seeing.
I'm sure those that fund you often ask this question, and your bosses is, how do you know you're making a difference? How, other than it feels good, how do you know that it's having an impact?
It's it's a great question to ask, and I think sometimes we say this is a long-term game, that we're not going to see immediate impact in the city tomorrow, but I really believe that if we want to have a better city and we want to impact the homicide rate and we want to impact the crime rate, we need to be able to invest more and spend more time in the work that we're doing now. We unfortunately know from a lot of the science around adverse childhood experiences is that when kids have been victims of crime at a young age, their likelihood of becoming a victim of crime at an older age, becoming addicted to opioids, having a whole host of societal problems increases dramatically. And these adverse childhood experiences are linked to school dropout and teen pregnancies and all these other risks there. And so if we do a better job preventing and responding to trauma at the onset, then we'll see numbers change in the long term. You know, one of the metrics that we're able to do is we do an outcomes measurement survey and we compare ourselves to the other 800 centers across the country that are like us. And we get a level of satisfaction from the caregivers who come through here. And consistently, we get these amazing reports back from them, 95, 96, 97% satisfaction rate, that the families feel like they were heard and families feel like they got the help that they needed and that they had questions answered. And that tells us that we're doing the right thing, that we're not just doing what we think is right, but we're doing what they need. And when they can share that with us, then that's a great measure of success.
Well, you know, it seems to me, Nestor, we've done, as you said, 70-some or whatever, up to 80-some of these interviews at this point. And Adam, whether it's we talk to Sarah Heminger at Thread, whether we talk to Senator Bill Ferguson, talk to the stuff Mike Sipes doing, Chris Battaglia over at Ben Franklin, I think what's becoming more and more clear each and every day, it's not going to be one thing. It's not going to be one thing that fixes the city.
Well, there's
city.
No Superman, as Barbara Mikulski right. told us. You know, I mean, everybody's doing their part, and I'm, you know, no one sees the trauma like you see it on a daily basis. But, you know, hopefully you have less patients. Hopefully less people are coming in, right? I mean, that would be the reality. If we have a better society, there'd be less kids needing to come through your door, right?
Absolutely. You know, and I think that's part of what the secret is that, you know, we all can't be doing Thanksgiving dinner by ourselves. We need to be collaborating and coordinating more with a lot of these partners that are out there. We are blessed in Baltimore to be able to have many great organizations who are working to do well, but we need to connect. And I think one of the things that we do well and is unique about us is that we're an organization that's really forged in collaboration to begin with, that our founders saw 35 years ago that they can do this smarter when they do it in conjunction around one table, rather than saying, I'm in charge, I'm going to do it by myself. We don't run child abuse investigations in the city. We know who police and CPS are, but we give them that opportunity to be able to collaborate and convene and to just work smarter together. And I think that that same multidisciplinary approach and attitude is just so critical to find the right solutions and hand off the right programs to the right partners who can make the right decisions.
Adam, are there opportunities for folks who want to learn more or get involved or support your organization? Is there an opportunity for them to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Every day there is. I mean, certainly, you know, we're always grateful that a lot of what we do is predicated on funding there and that we, you know, we're lucky to get government funds, but those government funds need matches. And so we need general operating non-restricted and, you know, a gift of $5 or $5,000 goes a long way. You can make that donation online at BaltimoreChildAbuseCenter.org. We have volunteer opportunities for adults, people over the age of 18, after they've gone through a volunteer training so they can spend time in our space, you know, working with children or working with our staff to be able to help make that a softer landing when they get here. Come January, we'll be down in Annapolis again advocating for better laws, and it's always great to have people joining us and advocating with us, saying that, you know what, they really do care about child abuse and care about keeping kids safe, and so it's great to have those folks join us in Annapolis and, you know, call that lawmaker and say, you know, among the other things you're looking at, why don't you make sure we're doing our best to keep kids safe, and then people can take a training too, making sure that whether they invite us to come to their school and run a presentation for faculty, but it's up to us adults to be able to report child abuse when it happens there. And if we don't do it, then no kid can come here and get the great services that us and our team provides. And so learn how to prevent abuse and how to report it when, you know, how to respond to it when it comes up there. And you can learn that at our website too. You can go to our other website, reportabusemd.com, and take a free training and really learn what it is to observe and find child abuse and get active.
Adam, I was going to run into you around town and hearing the good stories you're telling. And I guess it's a tribute to Mueller that I said to him, hey, you know, book some great people on that are doing stuff. And I'm like, yeah, happened? He was shocked. Have you been to the Baltimore Child? Yeah, I've been up there. I toured the whole facility a number of years ago. I know Adam.
So never, Nestor never ceases to amaze
Baltimore,
me.
Baltimore, man.
It's Baltimore. And I think that's what we need to do is we need to be getting out there and seeing these great programs. And I'm grateful that you're highlighting this because we don't talk about child abuse enough, and we need to. And that's how we end it. That's how we end it, by having people like you talking about it, taking time to see it, and then doing something about it.
BCAC.org. Adam
BCAC.org.
BCACI. Did I say it wrong?
Do it again. I don't know.
BCACI. And his email is arosenberg@bcaci.org.
There we go.
Adam, appreciate you. Keep up the great work there. Keep keep the kids safe, all right?
Hey, thank you. Keep telling good stories, too.
Thank you for what you're doing.
You got it. Adam Rosenberg joining us here from the Baltimore Child Abuse Center in partnership with LifeBridge. You can find us out in the bio, Toyota.com, Audio Vault. You can find all the Baltimore Positive stuff that we do at BaltimorePositive.com. We're back at Jennings. We're going to be back at State Fair. We're going to be back at Fadley's, and we're doing bonus bye week, Baltimore Positive, great stories, which is what Baltimore Positive is all about. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, and WNST Baltimore Positive, and we never stop telling great stories and learning more about what keeps Baltimore moving.